Welcome to The Disappearing Mind, a unique podcast helping you find clarity and support along your dementia journey. Now, join National Dementia Trainer and Coach, Dawn Platt, for an all-new episode.
This episode of The Disappearing Mind is brought to you by Discovery Senior Living. Hello and welcome back to the Disappearing Mind podcast. My name is Dawn Platt. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today. Today I'm here in the studio and I'm going to be talking to someone as passionate about memory care as I am, someone who has over 25 years experience in memory care communities, taking care of many individuals with many different types of dementia. And we're going to be talking about why science-based memory care programs matter, why they make a difference for you and your loved one. I hope that this will be informative. So let's go ahead and get started by welcoming my host. Her name is Maggie Mariello. Maggie has over 25 years experience in memory care as a director and operating memory care communities across the United States. She is the Assistant National Director of Memory Care Programs for Discovery Senior Living. And we're going to be talking about the program Shine today by Discovery Senior Living as our science-based program. Welcome to the podcast, Maggie.
Well, thank you for having me, Dawn.
It's exciting to have you in the studio again.
Thank you.
And I think that today we have a lot to talk about. I know, Maggie, I'd like you to tell the audience, in case they missed your last podcast, a little about yourself, memory care-wise, and your passion and compassion for people who have dementia.
Well, I grew up in Maine taking care of my great-grandmother who had dementia. And back then, it was considered just senile. And then when I went into the CNA field, I worked in a memory care, and I just fell in love. It's a whole heart. You either really love being in memory care or it really upsets you. And with me, I just couldn't imagine a life outside of it. It just made sense. These people needed someone to love them, respect them. And if you can do that, you can really make a difference.
So you've been in the memory care field for over 25 years. Tell us a little bit about that diversity. Big memory cares, small memory cares, all different sizes?
I've been in memory cares as small as 15 residents and as large as 78.
Okay.
I really enjoy this between 30 and 40 residents. I find that's a good number. You can really get to know your residents, and it can be more of a neighborhood home-like experience compared to the larger, where it almost feels like a clinical area.
So you've seen a lot of different memory care type programs, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And today we're going to talk about why the science-based program makes a difference. We'll get into, you know, how that has changed how you operate a memory care, maybe some of the benefits for our families who may be looking or considering memory care. But in your role now, in your assistant national director role, you help support over 180 memory care communities across the United States in four different branded memory care programs. How is that? How is that diversity for you? And what have you learned from that?
Well, I help communities that are as small as 12 residents in their memory care, all the way up into very large. And one thing that goes across the board is the team members, the employees there want to make a difference. And you ask them, it's not a client, it's not a patient, it's their resident, it's their person. Mm-hmm. And you see that across the board. People who choose to work in the memory care setting choose it. That's their calling. They don't want to do any other type of work. And that's what we really look for in a memory care program that is science-based, because the science will only work if there's people there who love them enough to do it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you're involved in a lot of that training?
Yes, we have boots on the ground training, we have online training, and we have continuing training. The science comes out, constantly new information about the disease process. So we have to make sure that our team members have the most up-to-date information so they can succeed in honoring their residents.
So, Mary, are you saying that it's not one size fits all, or perhaps the training that many memory cares get up front, the state-regulated training, perhaps isn't enough, that it needs to be ongoing?
It has to be continuously going. Most states, their curriculums only update every few years.
Mm-hmm.
Literally every month, we're finding out new information. Plus, majority of states' education is based on Alzheimer's type dementias. There's over 100 different types of dementias that all start in different parts of the brains with different symptoms and different supports that they need.
Yes.
So one size doesn't fit all. There's no way in a few hours training every year that you have enough tools at your disposal to really support these people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with that. But, you know, I want to talk about diving into something that Maggie and I feel is truly at the heart of what we do, and that's quality memory care, right? We want to provide quality memory care. What does that mean exactly? You know, we want to educate you, the listener. We want to educate you, the loved one, you, the person who perhaps have dementia, to really kind of understand what you should be looking for and why it's important. And, you know, this is based on, between us, Maggie, we have over 60 years, right? 60 years of experience in the memory care field, taking care of people who have dementia. And we've seen, frankly, things that work and things that don't work, right? But we've seen a lot of changes. And, you know, when I say you're unique, I mean you're unique. You're unique as a family. Your loved one is unique because they're your loved one. And their disease could be unique. So we don't want to come across that there's one curriculum or one way that works. We know better. And that's why we love a science-based program and why science matters. And, you know, often this is misunderstood or overlooked when it comes to memory care providers. And there are a lot of them. I think all memory care programs have good intentions. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes. I've worked with 6 different memory care programs through my whole life. And there was always that respect and wanting to do well. But the facts are is the science changes every year.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that follow-up, that education, and people dedicated to make sure that those tools are put into place, you get stagnant and then you're not giving your residents what they need.
Absolutely. And you know, what I want the family to know, what I want the person to know is that, you know, with our experience in the memory care field, you know, participating in curriculum, learning, training at all levels. We're both certified trainers and we both have differing degrees and certificates in the field of dementia. We have really come to know and understand that there are changes that need to happen. We're seeing things even with our experience that we maybe haven't dealt with before. So for you who's brand new at this, we need you to understand that things change. And one of the most important things that I have experienced is that the needs of my client, or the needs as a dementia coach, or the needs of an individual that lives in one of the communities that I work for have changed. They've changed over time. We're seeing not only younger people, we're seeing a lot more educated people. We're seeing people with new and mixed dementias. And we're seeing, you know, the ramping up again of the veteran. And so this time it's the Vietnam veteran, which comes with a whole new generation, right? So Maggie, tell us a little bit about some of those trends that you've seen change and really why it's important that our memory care programs are updated. We're going to talk about SHINE, the program, you know, that you're an expert in. And we're going to talk about how that updates every 2 years and why that's important because of these changes. But tell me, what have you seen over the years with not only residents, people you care for, but just the needs and maybe even behaviors in general?
Well, when I started majority of our residents, I would say at least 80%, were Alzheimer's based.
Mm-hmm.
They also tended to be older women. Now, honestly, you might have 50% of your residents are men, and only maybe half of them are Alzheimer's at all.
Uh-huh.
We're seeing higher levels of men, higher levels of vascular dementia, or even a Parkinsonian's type of dementia.
Yeah.
Or what we've actually started seeing with first responders, firemen, military people, is a post-traumatic stress dementia.
Yes.
And I've come across people who have chemical dementia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
From the terrible chemicals they've been exposed to that they weren't protected from. They knew they were going to cause cancers. They didn't realize they were going to cause dementias.
Yes.
So we have gentlemen who may be very physically fit who are having mid-stage dementia before they even officially qualify for Social Security. And so that's a whole new gamut.
Absolutely.
That curriculum has not caught up to yet.
So you must be dealing with families that are really at their wits' end trying to get care. I mean, you're talking about people who have no benefits, people who weren't expecting even to access health care. So let's go back to your early days. And why don't those early day programs and things we learned back then work now or on for these people? Why do you think that is?
Well, your 80-year-old grandma, who was a homemaker her whole life.
Right.
When she gets dementia, she's going to want to go to things that are comfortable for her, things that remind her of her life.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to want homemaker things. She's going to want to do like doing dishes. She's going to want to take care of babies. She's going to want to do laundry, socialize with the families. A 65-year-old man who's been in the military and played golf and has been physically fit his whole life, he is not going to sit around and want to do crosswords, play bingo, and fold laundry.
Right.
That's not going to happen. So we can't automatically assume that what we did even 10 years ago mm-hmm. is going to be important for this gentleman. And so we have to realize that our programming is changing every year, but a lot of our standards and curriculum are stuck from 20 years ago.
Absolutely. And, you know, let's just talk to the audience at this point here, because I think this is critical. You know, families are coming in, they're touring communities, they don't know what to look for. Many tell me that they feel like they're being sold a bill of goods, right? And we don't believe that. We believe that our programs are science-based, that they have purpose and all. But for that person you've just described or that group, you know, if you were them and you went in, tell them what you'd be looking for and that uniqueness, that 65-year-old gentleman who probably doesn't listen to Frank Sinatra, right? He probably is more a rock and roller, right? Tell that family, if that were you, kind of some of the things that maybe they could look for that might help them, right, be successful in that memory care program.
Well, when you walk into the memory care, first is look at the team members. Are they happy? Are they cheerful? Next, look at the surroundings. What music is playing in the background? If there's a TV going on, what's on the TV?
Mm-hmm.
What's on the calendar? And also check to see if they have parallel programming options.
Tell them what that is, Maggie.
So the reality is when I live in a memory care, I am not playing bingo.
Okay.
But I also know with my personality type, I am not going to sit still while everyone else is playing bingo. What are my options?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have other options for people who do not want to garden or who do not want to play Scrabble or do not want to play bingo?
Yeah.
So what are their options? Do you have an area where they can play poker? Do you have an area where they could be having snacks and coffee or a garden or, you know, individual things, a workbench where they maybe could be rummaging through things that they would have had in their home?
Yeah.
What is there for them to do? And that is vital. That is what you need for your programming for your loved one. We're not all the same. You know, what other options? What if my husband likes to be up late at night watching football? Is that okay? Or is everyone going to be expected to go to bed at 7
Absolutely.
O'clock?
Absolutely.
You know, what if when I'm in your memory care, I'm not getting up at 6:30 in the morning and breakfast? What if I don't get up till 9:30?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to be able to eat? this is important to realize that we're not the same people who are getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning and then going to bed at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. This is the generation that went to Woodstock.
Right. Yes.
Are we ready for the generation that went to Woodstock?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they're different. And it's okay that they're different. Let's talk about, I want to get a little bit into the science. I want to talk specifically about SHINE because it's the number one memory care program that comes to mind when I think about change, right? It's not the same memory care program. If it were around 15 years ago, that it would be the same today. It changes. So SHINE memory care program is the proprietary memory care program for Discovery Senior Living. It is based on several sciences, and one of those, the first one is neuroplasticity, which is the science that says that neurons that die with dementia have the ability to regenerate itself through specific routines and structures and cycles that people can do. It is not a cure. You know, it doesn't claim a cure. It just maintains that level of neurons to various degrees, depending on the disease and the stage and all of those things. But it's based on a science and a structure. The program is therapeutic. It's not just recreational or socially based, even though it has those components in it. It has true science-based exercise, therapeutic regimens like art and music and touch and aroma and all of those things in it. But it also is a curriculum that changes every couple of years based on the Alzheimer's Association, which is the leading experts in the United States, perhaps the world, but in the United States, on Alzheimer's disease and really many dementias, leading research, all of those things. This curriculum actually goes through a stringent process and it changes. It's updated based on the latest standards in treatment, including medication, right? As well as non-pharmacological approaches. And those are added in every couple of years. And so that the program stays fresh based on what we know today. And I think that the differentiator that brings to the table is outstanding. I mean, I know many programs that I work with many years ago or became acquainted with are the same today as they were 10, 15, 18 years ago. And we know that things have changed and you've described the person, the individual, right? The other thing that it includes is that occupational profiling piece that says not everybody's the same and that we need to know their biographical information to be able to engage with them, to be able to build trust, to be able to really facilitate what they have loved and done in their life, right? It's important that we know who they are, what they believe, where they are spiritually, occupationally, where they are in the family, maybe heritage, tradition. All of those factors don't go away with dementia and they remain important, but they have to have facilitation to move forward. So I like to say that we remind people of what they love when they can no longer remember. Sometimes that could even be a name or something that important. The other thing that it has is that Montessori or that skill set programming, which means that we try and maintain the intellect, right? The memory enhancing and the skills, whether that's a hobby like woodworking, which you could talk about, and or any other skill they have, maybe the violin or poetry, or I don't know, maybe they're a race car driver or a pilot. It doesn't matter what it is, but we try and maintain that instead of driving them to the old time, you know, bingo, just the music, just the blah, 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 you know, one size fits all kind of thing. But Maggie, you know, you've talked about this 65-year-old person, and I know, and I want to share a little bit with this audience about, you know, some of the success stories that you've had, but You know, why is that so important versus just having a set program that everybody does the same thing? Why is tailoring and customization important?
Because everyone is individual. And what we're seeing now, the person we're seeing now, isn't who they are. We're seeing so many outward symptoms of the disease process. But if we can find out who they are, we can give them the highest quality of life possible. And that's what it's about, is giving them the highest quality of life and the most honor we can. So by including their life story, who they are, we can make sure they have that. Were they a pharmacist? Well, he may be a pharmacist. Why is he going to want to be at, you know, artwork?
Right.
So I've at times taken our medication report and I've made up one and given him the physician's desk reference. And he would sit there and write out the side effects for me and do like a patient consult that a pharmacist would have.
Absolutely.
The gentleman we spoke about that was 65, he was a fireman and was exposed to some terrible chemicals that made him very anxious and paranoid. 2 years before that, he was playing basketball. He was very physically fit. He was working as a fireman. So then when he got to this point and his wife needed help and she needed to put him in a community, they didn't ask questions beyond him being a firefighter. So then they started trying to do personal care with him. He would get so panic-stricken, he would lash out. And he had communities just saying, no, we won't take him, no, we won't take him. But then when we sat down, we talked to the family, we realized, talking to them, he had suffered a lot of childhood trauma. And by going in with knowing that and doing that calm approach and just slowly talking to him and working through it, he was able to succeed. This gentleman who was losing weight, not being able to eat, not getting the care he needed, was able to start putting on weight, was able to have meals, was able to be clean and cared for, and his family was able to have real visits with him again.
So Maggie, you know, that must have been very frightening for that young wife, right? But also kind of a labeling. I think that we have to be very careful, you know, not all dementias exhibit behaviors like we're going to talk about. I want to make that very clear. You can't just go through the behaviors of Alzheimer's disease and expect that everybody's going to do all those things. That is absolutely not the case. But there are certain behaviors that can be familiar to certain types of dementia. And then there are others that are just for other reasons. So, you know, I think that learning him, how many communities was he in before he came to you?
Three. In less than 6 months.
And he failed at all three. So, you know, the reason he failed isn't that they're bad communities. It's because his circumstances, his age, his disease, his life history and some of his trauma, right, caused him to do things because you had to build trust with him, right, prior to that. So let's talk a little bit about the most important part, I feel like, of a great science-based memory care program, and Shine has one of the best, is the behavioral management piece. So talk a little bit to the audience, and I want you to do this because I want families to go in equipped to ask some questions. So I'm not saying here, and you'll never hear me say that every community, every program is going to be totally successful with your loved one. Behaviors can be very difficult, but when we partner together, we can have, and I think Shine says, any change is a victory, right? So it's not a cure, but it's a reduction or a change. It makes a difference. But talk about the behavioral management piece, the investigation you did for this person, not his disease, not his whatever, because, you know, he had something pretty specific, and you're going to see those in generalities, but you're not going to see 50% of the individuals who live in memory care have that. right? But, and then you went back and you did something with your staff, because even your staff was a little fearful in the beginning. Talk about that and how you walk through that.
It's important to learn their history. And so when I meet someone who has a memory issue, a deficit, I go and I talk to them. It's not enough to talk to the family. Talk to the resident, hold their hand, see how they react to touch, and find out first from there, find out the history. And then I go back and I speak to my team.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, because when you say a 65-year-old man who's physically fit,
tall big
man, and I have these small female caregivers, mm-hmm. they were fearful. And so, but then when I started talking about his life experiences and everything, that empathy that they had that made them choose this job came out. And so then they started talking about it and speaking about it. And then when they start caring for him, they'll be like, oh, we love you. It's okay. We're here. And I actually had another caregiver take the lead teaching a new nurse how to speak to the gentleman. She's like, oh, no, we do this.
Mm-hmm.
This works. In saying, oh, no, we don't come from behind him. We come up to him, hold his hand, and talk to him first, and then we move. And so they got it. They were, again, they just needed the tools and the education. But if I hadn't followed through and gotten the full story, it would have been a failure again.
Absolutely. So how much approach, de-escalation, and redirection does Shine teach?
It's everything. Our approach to our resident is the first thing, the most important, because if we don't start off with that calm attitude, approaching them and making sure they see us and that we know who they are and that they are safe, it's going to fail.
Absolutely. How often does that need to happen, Maggie?
The approaching, every time. I mean, no one wants to be startled. Us with healthy brains are not going to handle it well if someone comes up behind us and touches us without addressing us first. Now imagine they feel more susceptible. They're not always aware of their surroundings. They may be scared and anxious, and they may not be able to understand everything you're saying to them. And if you just reach out and touch them without making that connection first, it's automatically going to be stressful for everyone.
So you took this gentleman's life story and his occupation and your behavioral management program from Shine and married them and then taught it to your team, who then engaged it. How successful was this?
It was very successful. I was shocked at how quickly they were able to handle the situation and help him. This gentleman was losing pound after pound. He wasn't eating because he would get stressed out in a dining room area. So we brought him into a nice quiet area where we could dim the lights. One caregiver would sit with him and help him eat. Within a month, he was starting to put on weight. You know, he went from getting weaker and weaker to be able to walk around with his family. You know, just learning him and learning about his disease raised his quality of life.
Absolutely. So let's address the audience now. And I want you to share with the audience how important that you think the behavioral management piece is for any memory care program, and especially if your loved one, but whether your loved one or not is exhibiting behaviors, it really is important with any type of dementia that that piece is there. I think it's the solid piece of a good memory care program, that foundation. But if a family's touring, what kind of questions would they ask a community in regards to, you know, most people go in and they look at physical plant. They may eat a meal, right? It is important and meet the staff, but how would they measure whether that memory care community had that very important component, that science-based, you know, component of having behavioral management program and ensuring that their staff were trained in it over and over? What would you tell them to look for?
I automatically always say, first look at how the caregivers are interacting with the residents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go and listen to the conversations. You know, also ask, you know, what is your behavioral interventions? What are your trainings for your team members? Do you have, you know, monthly trainings? How often are your trainings done? Do you work with, you know, a third party psych provider? You know, but the biggest thing is pay attention. And I always tell families, you know, if you tell me you're coming on a Wednesday at 2, I can put on a great show. But come unexpected. Come on the weekends. If you're really interested in someplace, come on a Sunday afternoon. See how it is. See how their team members are interacting with the residents. Look at the residents. Are they happy? No one's happy 24 hours a day.
Right.
But how are they handling it?
Mm-hmm.
They may have someone that's grumpy, but are they walking with that person and showing caring for them?
Yes.
Or is it just the nurse is going to. There's a place for medication, mm-hmm. and I 100% agree that there's times and places for medication.
Yes.
But it can never be the first answer.
Absolutely.
But if they have a good partnership with their caregivers, with, you know, work hand in hand with psych, work hand in hand with therapies, and look at their programming and their staff and get the feel for it.
Absolutely. So let's just have a real conversation. Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to put this out here. And I want families to know and understand this, because memory care is not easy. And I believe in memory care. I support, you know, memory care providers. I believe that they're trying to do the right thing and do a good job. But, you know, dementia is a horrific disease. It is progressive. There is no cure. And I am not going to sit here and say that, you know, every science-based program is going to solve your issues. I'm not saying that at all. There's a partnership that comes along, and just like families are seeking care because it can be overwhelming, 36-hour day, right? In memory care, there's a partnership, okay, that has to occur between the community team members, right, the director of memory care, and the family. And it's not always perfect. It's not always easy. And what we try and do is prepare you for the next stage, because there is a next stage.
Mm-hmm.
And you may grieve at every stage. And just because something bad happens or bad behavior, we're going to walk through it together. So I'm not here, and I don't want you to think that, you know, a great memory care program is going to solve all the issues, all the symptoms, or necessarily do anything like that. I'm saying that it brings quality of life. I'm saying that there's a partnership and a science behind walking this journey together. It takes the family and the cooperation. A good memory care provider will educate you, okay, in the good and the bad, and they're going to call and tell you some bad things, right? Mm-hmm. But we're going to walk through it together on the journey. I think that that's important. And we're going to be equipped with the proper tools for the best opportunities, right? So talk a little bit about that, in that partnership and that success, because we can't cure everything, right? Just because your loved one, let's say your loved one does have extreme behaviors. So they might still have extreme behaviors, but are they safe? Are they minimized? Are we trying different approaches? Will you cooperate with us both pharmacologically and non-pharmacologically? And we haven't talked about that. We'll hit on that in just a moment before we close. But talk about that partnership, Maggie, because it's not always perfect. And you're going through some things and we're trying to support you. But how does that work for families?
One thing I always say is I'm going to be honest with my families.
Right.
They're not always going to like what I have to say, but I'm going to be honest. And so I want to make sure my families have an education about their loved one's diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
and what the steps are involved and what we're trying. So if we maybe are having a behavior in the afternoons, I will contact the family, say, this is what we're having for behaviors. This is what we're trying.
Mm-hmm.
If this doesn't work, we may try this next.
Right.
And let them know we've got the doctor involved. It might be something that I need to have the family member come in and spend a couple hours in the evening with their loved one.
Mm-hmm.
Some dementias, unfortunately, have a very anxious, paranoid kind of state to them.
Yes.
And so having that loved one that they trust there with them during the most critical times could be a help. And so family members and I have to be a duo.
Yes.
But I have to give that family that knowledge. I have to let them know what's going on and what's the worst case scenario and the best case scenario. This isn't going to be perfect. Discussing, especially with some of the dementias that don't get as much of the spotlight. We hear a lot about the steps of Alzheimer's, but we don't hear about the steps of Lewy bodies mm-hmm. or Parkinson's and what that could mean. Just having discussion not that long ago with a daughter whose mother got diagnosed with frontal temporal lobe dementia. Mm-hmm. And the only thing she knew was, oh, that's what Bruce Willis has. Mm-hmm. And so she has this fear.
Right.
And having to explain to her, that's one person with it.
Right.
These are the things we know that's going to happen, but this is what we can do to support your mom.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Maggie, let's talk just a little bit before we close on non-pharmacological approaches, what SHINE offers in that, what does that mean?
Non-pharmacological issues, suggestions are like, mom is getting anxious and pacing every afternoon. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have a couple options. We could give her a medication that calms her down. She sits in a chair and stares at a TV for a couple hours. Or could we take mom for a little walk over to the cafe area, get her a cup of tea and a cookie, mm-hmm. and we sit in that nice quiet area, and she just has one-on-one conversation with us for 20 minutes while having a cup of tea. That's enough to relax her, and she can go back about her day. It's not going to be perfect, but can we take the edge off enough by doing that she doesn't have to have that medication?
Okay.
Because unfortunately, these medications, they calm them down, but they also make them a higher risk for falls mm-hmm. and infections and things along those lines.
Absolutely. So we do acknowledge the place for medication, but we also acknowledge the science base of engagement in something meaningful can distract someone with dementia and reduce behaviors or take the edge off, as you said. So the last thing that I want to talk about, and I want to talk about SHINE in this, communication with families are so important. Educating families are so important. Supporting families are very important. Specifically, what does SHINE offer families? And I want to recap for our audience of these are some of the things that they should look for. And if it's important to you, you know, expect in a memory care program when you're touring. But how does SHINE communicate with families and support families and all of that? How does that work?
Well, we have three different things in place. One is our Just Checking In program, where that is where our memory care directors are making conscious effort to reach out to our families. Mm-hmm. So we're sending them emails, pictures, phone calls. And it's not just because, oh, your mom had a bad day today. It's your mom had a good day in bingo. Your mom did good at exercise. Oh, we're noticing your mom is having a little bit of swelling in her feet. We're going to have the doctor check it out. Or the podiatrist came by today and said, your mom. It's every little thing. One thing I've heard over the years is families need more communication. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to give them so much communication, they know everything that's going on. And we push that with our third-party providers, too. You need to contact the families. Another aspect is our family support group meetings. We want to make sure that our families get the support emotionally that they need. As a director, we're making sure they're getting the education, but are they getting the emotional support? Mm-hmm. And oftentimes being surrounded by other family members who are going through the same thing is a benefit to them. And so that's something you're going to find in every SHINE neighborhood is the availability of a support group meeting. And then third is our family meetings. We're having meetings with all of our families to discuss any changes that may be happening, any concerns they have. We want to make sure that the families always have someone to talk to, mm-hmm. whether it's about a sock missing or they're sad about their loved one going into the next stage. We want to make sure that support is in place for them. And absolutely. I think that makes the difference, because it's not just the resident going through the disease process. It's this family. And every time their loved one declines, it's a whole new world opening for the family that they have to learn about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you, Maggie, for joining me today. An interesting discussion. And I want to recap, you know, for our audience, you know, we've talked about many things that we feel like are important. But if you're touring a community, some of the things you're going to want to look for is some of the suggestions that Maggie had today. Do they have a solid science-based program? How often does that program change? How was it written? Is it accredited, or is it validated by any national organization whose authority on Alzheimer's disease or dementia? The other part of it is really, does it offer both pharmacological and non-pharmacological approaches, right? And is it tailored to the individual? Does it take into account their biographical life story, which is critically important? Does it look at Alzheimer's disease only, or does it address the needs of younger, older, and the multiple types of dementia that your loved one may have that are going to make the difference? And then the staff. Maggie talked about the staff a lot, their engagement with the residents, who they are, how often they're trained, what kind of training. Are they empowered to understand behavioral management techniques? Is there a behavioral management program based in the memory care program period? I mean, that's a powerful question that you would ask. And then really that communication piece, I know for me with my own mom, I needed to know. Now, I know, and I've done this a very long time, but needing to know, I just didn't need to know when mom had a bad day. I needed to know what she was doing any day. It just really helped me and will help you. And then knowing that change is coming and that we're going to partner together. So I hope that this information has empowered you to make good decisions and really think a little different. You know, if a physical plan is important to you, that's wonderful. If something else is important to you, I think that there are some basic things that we've set you up with today that you can ask and look at. You are the individual. You are empowered to make the decision, and I am never going to tell you the decision to make, but I'm going to enlist my experience and the experience of my guests to help you make a good decision for you and your family. So thank you for joining. Please subscribe, share the podcast, visit us on Facebook, on YouTube. Please, please, if you are interested in asking questions to the podcast or a special podcast you would like us to do, please visit the website at www.thedisappearingmind.com. Let us know. Comment, like. We would really enjoy that. Our goal at the podcast is to get this information out there to as many people as possible. And at the end of the day, we want to make a difference for those people walking this journey together. Until next time, this is Dawn Platt. Make it a memorable day.
Thank you for joining us for the Disappearing Mind podcast. We hope it's helped you find clarity and support along your journey. Be sure to subscribe to never miss an episode, visit our website to suggest future topics, and share the podcast with friends and family.